E komo mai. Welcome to Kauai Community Radio's Talk Story. Talk Story, or Vala Ao in Hawaiian, is loosely translated as reminiscing and communicating. Jerry Santos is a musician, composer, singer, and storyteller. Although born and raised on Oahu, his family has ties to Kauai. It's his mother's birthplace and where his grandmother was midwife in the plantation town of Mana. Youngest of nine children, his professional music career began shortly after graduating from Kamehameha schools. His influences ranged from traditional Hawaiian music, like that of legendary Gabi Pahinui and Kui Lee, to folk musicians of the time, like Joni Mitchell. It was when he teamed with Robert Beaumont in Olomana that his reputation as a musician's musician was firmly established. As his experience grew, he found himself drawn to only perform, as he puts it, songs of substance. With the Hawaiian Renaissance of the 70s, he quietly voiced his mana'o through mele. Whether protesting the bombing of Ko'olawe or urging folks of Oahu to conserve water. With the passing of his Olomana partner Robert Beaumont, Jerry paused, eventually releasing a solo album, and then gathering friends Haunani Apoliona, Wale Suinaga, and Willie Paikuli to form a new version of Olomana. And with that, the tradition continues and the music plays on. Please join us for this very special talk story with Jerry Santos.
Welcome to KKCR, Jerry.
Aloha, my old friend. How nice to be here on Kauai in this beautiful place with the bamboo forest outside the window.
Here at Jungle Radio.
Yes, I love it.
You have family connections to this island. Can you tell us about that?
Strangely, Kauai has been present in my life always. My mama was born in Mana, came to Honolulu to live, met my father. They came back here to Kauai. The family worked at Makaweli Plantation out on the west side until they had the first four children and then moved back to Honolulu, out to the windward side, where I came along as number nine. So even though the connection personally to the island of Kauai was not there, the family stories were there while I was growing up. In my adolescent and teenage years, our 4-H leader, the man who taught us to rope and ride in our 4-H horse club, was Shima Kapahu, who came from the west side, from Waimea, and came to live on Oahu. So there was that Kauai connection. We came here to ride in junior rodeos in Waimea when I was in high school. And then as the years progressed and I started becoming a working musician, after we did our first recording as Olomana, Kauai was the first place we came to work at the old Kauai Resort. So Kauai has always been present.
And that explains why we love you so much on Kauai, too. There is that connection. Tell us about your small kid time.
Well, that's very convoluted. Like most local families who perhaps come from a place of no means, but a great deal of personality and exuberance. My childhood was very mixed. I am the child raised by the village, really. I grew up in Kaneohe, my formative years. And then by the time I was nine, we had moved down the road to Kahului. So I'm the youngest of nine children in my family, six girls, three boys. Aunties, uncles, Hanai families, I really am the product of a village.
Who were your musical influences? What artists?
Well, my mother, again, would attest that I was kind of a confusing child to her because in my room I had the music of Bill Kaiva and Lena Alahaili. I had Bob Dylan and Joni Mitchell and Joan Baez. And I had Janis Joplin, and I had everything on the table that was in between. I loved music. I loved to play music. And words have always been important to me. So naturally, the music that came out of that period of time focused on songwriting and words and creating thoughts and using music to motivate people besides just having a nice beat and a nice you know, chorus. It was substance. Songs were about something.
Of course, I can't go any further without mentioning Ku'uhome o Kahalu'u. Please tell us the story behind that song and then maybe share it with us.
Well, of all the songs I've written, it was really surprising to me that this is the one that most people recognized at first. Because this, for me, is a very personal song. This is my growing up song, if you will. As I said, I started making music at an early age. I used to go down to Waikiki as soon as they built Kahikili Highway, and those of us from the windward side had a way into town. You know, it was out with the thumb, which I don't suggest anybody do now. But go down to Waikiki, sit outside of the nightclubs and watch people play music, sit outside of steamboats and watch Auntie Genoa Keawe and the Hawaiian music, and then go on down the road. I started making music in Waikiki when I was a senior in high school. Right out of high school, I started playing in front of the international marketplace. So it was my first paying gig, if you will. Many came after that, and certainly in all of the experiences I've been having a little success. Did some radio programs. KCCN had Al Kalama, who was on the air at that time, had taken an interest in me and come out to Chuck's Steakhouse, where I was playing in Hawaii Kai before they built the shopping center. Took me up to the station, and I played a couple of songs that I had written, including a song called Omalia. And they played it on the air. Anyway, to make a long story short, I had been offered a job in Colorado, was headed that way, made a stop in California, in Los Angeles, where a producer told me I had great potential and I should stay in town and they would work with me, and maybe in a year I'd be ready to do a demo. But I was an impatient young man, and so headed up to San Francisco. Now, this is the first time I'd ever lived away from the islands. Found San Francisco in 1970 to be a magic place for music. There was music on every street corner. And I thought, you know, I've been working in lots of clubs at home. I should be able to find a job here. But there are hundreds of musicians, just as good, if not better, than me in the city. And so it meant that the city was full of music. People were playing on street corners. People were getting together and playing at coffee houses where they would feed you, but they wouldn't give you any money for your dinner. And so it was a happy time for me, but at the same time, a time of self-realization, perhaps, about what were my choices? How far was I going? And on the day this song was written, I like to tell people that I had caught the four buses, walked the four hills, the four flights of stairs, only to find out the heater in the apartment wasn't working. Now, I have no idea why that would have been important, but the voice in my head said, an island boy belongs on an island. I knew that by the time I would return, things would be different. Change happens very fast in Hawaii, not just in our own family lives, but certainly in the world around us. And so I sat down and wrote the song for my Hanai sister. It was she who taught me to play the guitar. It was she that I had played music with all through high school. She had chosen to stay in Kahalu'u, and Jerry set out into the world. So it was my conversation with her, telling her about how I was feeling at the time. You know, the choices we make as we go down the road. And certainly I think it was the idea for me that I could sing somebody else's music in another place, but I wouldn't be complete. And I could sing my own music in my own place and use that as the foundation for everything else that would come after. And so I think this song was very important to me. When people hear it, I don't think they really think about my story or my home, Kahalu'u. But what they always say is that they relate it to their own stories. We all have these places in the heart. I remember days when we were younger. We used to catch opu in the mountain stream. Round the Kola hills we'd ride on horseback. So long ago it seems it
was a dream. Last night I dreamt I was returning, and my heart called out to you, but I fear you won't be like I left you. Ike aloha ko me o kahalu. I remember days when we were wiser, when our world was small enough for dreams, and you have lingered there, my sister, and I know. Last night I dreamt I was returning, and my heart called out to you, but I fear I am not as I left you. Ike aloha ko.
How did you and Robert Beaumont team up?
I had met Robert through my friend who has made her home here on Kauai for many, many years, Cindy Combs. Cindy and I were old buddies, musical partners at the old Chuck Steakhouse. We had known each other for many years. I am the president of the Cindy Combs Admiration Society. I've always loved Cindy's ability to say through words and music things that my heart recognizes. And as a result, Cindy's been very gracious to let me record some of her songs. But Cindy and I went one evening to see some guys that she had heard play. And while we were there, Cindy introduced me to Robert. And he said, his comment to me was, "You're the guy who's singing O Malia on the radio." Al Kalama had taken me to KCCN Studios and recorded three songs. One was Liko Martin's Nanakuli Blues, a song called Uanohoa Wakupa, which is a Hawaiian standard, and a song I had written called O Malia. And that was the songs that they played on the radio. So it was really the O Malia song that Robert and I started talking about, why I had written that song, and we became friends. I went to California, made music for about 2 years. The Kahalu'u song was the turning point to bring me back home to the islands. Came back to where I had been making music at Chuck's Steakhouse, resumed playing there, and Robert had started a group called Olumana down in Waikiki at a sister club that was owned there called the Black Angus. At the time that I returned home, Robert then had been playing for a short time, mostly cover music, and Robert called me up one day and said, "You know, I like what you've been writing. I like what you've been saying. It's very close to what I've been thinking. Would you like to get together and play music?" And I had never really been a committed part of any band. You know, I had many musical friends who played with me for a time and then went on their way. But it was nice to have that invitation to create something. And so I played 4 nights a week at Chuck's and 3 nights a week with Robert. And it became something that grew out of that. But the friendship grew out of the idea that we were now in a time when Hawaii was changing and we were really coming to have some definite opinions about ourselves and the world we lived in. This song was written actually for the little ones in my family. Many, many of those, 32 nephews and nieces, grandnephews and nieces, I think over 100, and great-grandnephews and nieces. So there were many children, you know, to be considered. And it really was on a day when I had seen a little bit of sadness in the eyes of one of the members, the young kids in the family, because sometimes local kids growing up in the country are introduced to people who come from elsewhere in the world in their school setting, and sometimes they're made to feel that they're not quite as good. And I thought, that is the most ridiculous thing. I don't want any baby in my family to feel this way. And so I wrote this song, and I think it was great because it gave me perhaps my best friendship in music. And Robert and I got to record this on our very first recording, and Cindy Combs played the guitar parts on the recording.
For they saw in it the beauty that only love can keep from dying. Oh, Maria, don't you cry. And though our lands they take away with these changes every day, cement our stand where we once played. What they cannot take away is a love we share today, and the children we will bear to carry on. Can't you see? Oh, Maria, it's up to you and me. So run and tell the children of our kind. Tell them to be strong in hearts and minds, and sing to them a song of a thousand years of pride. Oh, Maria, take my hand, now it is time for us to stand. Mauke o kaina inau pio. Surely life in our land and our people must be perpetuated by our children. We were talking about Robert during the time that we were making music. The Protect Kaho'olawe Ohana was very busy organizing people across the state of Hawaii. Walter Reedy and George Helm had sent a messenger to us saying that if we sang the Kaho'olawe song, it would help to spread the word. And so we recorded Mele o Kaho'olawe, written by Uncle Harry Kunihi Mitchell from Ke'enai, Maui, and sang it with as much heart as we could muster. Fortunately, what would follow was being embraced by people in these communities and in this movement. And as a result, again, going out and actually going to Kaho'olawe several times, actually meeting people on every island, which eventually led to informational gatherings for the Office of Hawaiian Affairs. You know, as the years passed by, all of these things kind of snowballed into each other to create the things that we take for granted at this moment in time. There was a very strongly intended idea that the generations that were important to us to give us this knowledge was disappearing really quickly. And so the idea of the sharing between the generations was very present. Uncle Harry used to come to Honolulu and camp out at my house. He would just arrive and take over my bedroom and go up to the university and help them to establish the Lo'ie that is part of the Hawaiian Studies Center there. Uncle Harry, the Kupuna Wahine of Moloka'i, Auntie Clara Ku and Lani Kapuni and the rest of the gang, Mary Lee, they were very present. They would be on Kaho'olawe with us, and singing those women to sleep in the firelight of Kaho'olawe was something that I will forever remember. Uncle Harry Mitchell was very much a very great gift at the time when we were making our music, because his gift to us, his thought to us always when he played, and oftentimes when we played out in those years, Uncle Harry would come if he was in town and be with us. He was part of the gang. And he would always say, let the spirit move you. Always remember, whatever you're playing, let the spirit move you. And so he was very present in that way. And another person who became part of my life during that time is a woman that I saw in a courtroom in downtown Honolulu.
Emmett Aluli was on trial for having trespassed on the island of Kaho'olawe. And it was really the beginning of the rights of Hawaiians to access their land. It was an interesting time, but I was sitting in the courtroom listening to these proceedings, and I looked across the way, and this woman was sitting there with the most beautiful silver hair and a red kekepa, absolutely gorgeous. And our eyes met just for a few brief seconds, but I was captivated by this person. I had not met her or seen her before. At the end of this day, people gathered out at Kawela Bay, and families of Walter and Richard Sawyer, who had been incarcerated, the children, members of the Ohana, had gathered this day out there. And I watched the strength that these people got from being around this woman. And so I found out who she was. They said her name was Auntie Emma DeVries, and found out that she was very important to the spiritual aspect of what these folks were doing. Anyway, I went home thinking about this and wrote a song called The Light in the Lady's Eyes. I found out that Auntie Emma lived at Queen Emma Summer Palace. The home is called Hanaya Kamalama in the Uwanu Valley. At the time, she was one of the curators there. And called up on the telephone, introduced myself, and asked if I could come to see her. And so she said, yes, come up. You know, at a certain time, I went up to the palace. Nobody was around. The palace was closed. I sat on the front porch and I thought, why would she tell me to come if nobody is here? And the ua came down, just a gentle kilihune. And this little black cat kept coming around the corner, sitting next to me, and then walking around the corner of the building. I followed it around. There was a door. And right when I started to approach the door, I heard a voice say, Aloha mai, Jerry, come inside. The door opened, and there was Auntie Emma DeVries. She invited me in. We sat and talked for hours. I played her the song I wrote for her. And we shared many things from that moment on. She was like our spiritual advisor. But more importantly, as I keep telling my friends, my younger friends who play music with me, I say, I love that you treat me with respect, but I also want to be able to feel that you're my friend. And Auntie certainly was my friend. She accompanied us to Kaho'olawe. She did many things with us over the years. But she also would say, I have my boogie shoes on, come pick me up. And we would go off to the oasis. We would go enjoy music. And people would just, I remember specifically to tell you what Auntie was like, a concert at Andrews Amphitheater many years ago. It was called Life, No Nukes Hawaii. Graham Nash and Jesse Colin Young and many of our heroes in, you know, that kind of music had come to town. And Olumana was featured at this concert as well. It was a very hot day, and these folks who had come from elsewhere were sitting there complaining about how warm and humid it was. Auntie was meditating in the back of the stage, and a little light rain started coming down, just the tiniest breeze. And one of the crew said to my friend who was standing next to me, shouldn't somebody get the old lady out of the rain? To which we smiled and asked him, why don't you look up? Do you see any clouds? He said, I think I'll leave her alone. Auntie was one of those people that made you feel that just this moment is not the only moment you're in, you know, that magic was possible, that we have the ability to do things above and beyond what we imagine if we open our minds to those things. So she was that for us. And she gave us this song that, actually she gave this to Robert as a birthday present. We were going to do two songs on the next recording. And she gave me a song to sing from her grandmother. And she wrote this one for Robert to enjoy. And when we got to the studio and we recorded this song, I was supposed to sing the harmony, but Auntie had accompanied me to the station that night. And so we put the headphones on her. And it's the only known recording of her singing. And to this day, people keep thinking it's me, but no, it is Auntie Emma DeVries. And in this song, it uses the metaphor of the lei. You know, when we make a lei for somebody, we're not just sowing flowers or braiding the plant material. What we're doing is attaching our blessings, our love, our best intentions, our aloha, so that when you give a lei that you've made to somebody, all of those things go with it. But this song suggests that long after the flowers have faded, long after the plant material has turned to dust perhaps, the intention that went into the making of the lei, the love of the spirit, well, that continues. For that's something that we can call on and count on always. Of love say that you are as a flower lei whose beauty will never fade, and throughout all of life, even eternity, I know in my heart you will always be with me. And so I find myself waiting here, waiting for you and all the divine energies that surround us to come and make sure the love that's been shared always remains together.
Touched on being part of the protests about the bombing of Kaho'olawe. How do you feel about the changes that are happening on the Hawaii political scene today?
I think we're living in a time that's seeing the fruition of works of Native Hawaiians for over 100 years and more. We're living in a political climate where, in order for Hawaii to be healthy, the Hawaiian people need to be healthy. In order for them to be healthy, there has to be a sense of self-determination. I think we are in an exciting time when perhaps there are glimmers of hope on the horizon, and there are many committed people that hopefully will direct what is happening politically to that fruition. I hope that we will see some changes in my lifetime. But I know from past experience, from sitting around in those discussions at Iolani Palace under the trees in the 1970s when people were talking about the need for Hawaiian language, and then those wonderful people who created Punana Leo not only educated the children in terms of Hawaiian language, but the families. And as a result, at this moment in time, we are seeing Hawaiian being spoken in the families and in the home. We see people putting forth ideas of education, very, very important. And now we have PhD programs in Hawaiian studies. You know, so I think that what we have seen during the time of the Renaissance and now is tools being put in place for what will happen in the future. And I think right now is an interesting time. I hope good minds and good hearts will prevail in guiding people to what they need. But in order for Hawaii to be healthy, the Hawaiian people need to be healthy. You know, the 1970s was a time when people were looking at development and acknowledging that we are really a product of our environment, and we are blessed with such gifts as children of these islands, that the idea of aloha aina is one that is the undercurrent for all Hawaiian movements, because acknowledgement of the land, caring for the land, is really what nurtures our spirit. You know, we all go out into the world and we do things and we want everything fast right now. But at the end of the day, how much pleasure do we get from that? I get up in the morning and I'm at Avavamalu when the sun comes up and the first rays of the sun are warming me. Or I come to Kauai and I scurry up Pihia Trail and feel the winds of Koke'e and look down into the valleys. That kind of feeling you can only get from what nature gives you, I think, in my estimation anyway. I love to go out in the world and make my music, but it is the times when I am away in nature that gives me the healing that I need to be able to do my work.
Another musical contribution that you gave for those who lived in the islands, you were the voice of the Department of Water.
Wait, how does that go?
One tiny raindrop in the middle of the sea helped to form this island home for you. All of the beauty, all that we need, comes from the water, life's precious gift.
Message from the Honolulu Board of Water Supply. I did those commercials for, gosh, maybe about 10 years I worked. And the funny thing is that my contribution really was writing that song, doing the voiceovers for the commercials. Denise DeCoste Mahealani Cipher, who was the education director at the time, was brilliant, and she did such a good job. Incorporated me into her work enthusiastically, which in hindsight led for some, you know, really interesting moments when people come up to you in the grocery store and say, "Brother, if it rains today, how soon is that water available to drink?" Like, really? Or she had this one where it said, "Is your toilet singing to you?" I can't tell you how many times in the street people will come up to me and say, "Is your toilet singing to you?" I'm like, "Thank you, Mahealani."
Every time I've seen you perform, you're very good at letting the audience know what the song you're singing is about. especially when it's Hawaiian language. Has that storytelling ability always been part of your performances?
I think that it's the kuleana, the responsibility for that stuff has become more present. You know, as time goes by, you learn. And you begin to think, what is the importance of what I'm doing? Auntie Malia Craver, again, another wonderful resource and mentor, always would say, what is your legacy? And it doesn't have to be grand, but what is your legacy? What is it that you're doing that is going to contribute? And how do you come upon that? In playing music, and my focus has always been trying to make music, first of all, that speaks to us. You know, there was a time when people made Hawaiian music to sell to the rest of the world, to bring them here. I was more interested in creating Hawaiian music that would bring people back. You know, bringing, even if you're just here and you've drifted away from those things that are Hawaiian, to bring you back to nurture that. So the stories that I tell on stage oftentimes are like my personal experiences. You know, they're not stories that I'm making up. They're stories about my personal experiences, either with the material that I create or in terms of the Hawaiian music that I've, you know, gathered to me over the years. The stories that I heard about these songs, someone else told me these stories, and now it's my kuleana to pass them on intact in the way that I was given them. And it becomes ever more important because as the face of the land changes and people come here from all over the world, the oral history is contained within the Hawaiian music. You know, the songs tell you why places are named the way they are. What is the names of the winds and the rains in certain areas? Who lived in those places? What is their connection to the land? What is their connection to each other? And so in recounting those things, you know, I've been at the Hilton Hawaiian Village in Waikiki for 21 years now. Got in the Hilton Wedding. But people think sometimes when they come, they say, it's really nice that you tell these stories for the people who are visiting. But I don't tell them for the people who are visiting. I tell them to be telling them so that they're fresh in my mind. I repeat them all the time. And because a lot of local people don't know these stories, you know. And so the stories are for everyone. And the purpose is to recount them in the way that I've been giving them so that they will be heard. That I'll remember, they'll be heard, and somebody else will remember, and they'll tell it at some other time.
When young musicians just starting in the business come to you for advice, what do you tell them?
Don't do this now. No, you know what? It's amazing when you think about how, especially the recording industry has changed. I mean, now with the smaller studios, accessibility to those studios for more people, we're seeing tremendous people come out of this stuff. Very, very talented. I don't usually give advice. I just say, you know, for me, the idea of playing music has been about commitment and self-sacrifice. So what is it that you want to do? If you want to be a musician, then you have to think about the path that you're walking on. You know, music can always be a part of your life in one way or another. But if you want to be a working musician, then you have to take all of those other things into consideration. You know, you might get lucky, you might make lots of money and retire and do something else. But if you want to be a working musician, my heroes were people who made music all the time, you know, who had a career. They didn't just sing some songs. They didn't do a couple of recordings. They... Auntie Genoa Keavi, until, you know, a month before her passing, she was still coming down to visit me with her ukulele. And the fact that this woman that I had heard my mother talking about, you know, so lovingly when I was a kid, became my friend. You know, when Eddie Kamai comes by the Hilton and sits in for a song or two, I'm like, I would pinch myself because I'm thinking, you know, I know I'm older now, but Eddie Kamai is sitting there playing with me. So... it's what you want out of it. I hope to be doing this until they drag me kicking and screaming off the stage, but I think I might have a week or two left.
You mentioned the importance of having a current recording. Olamana's last release was 1991. Yeah, it is now 2014.
This is true.
How much longer do we have to wait?
You know, the fact that people are interested is great. Someone asked me, why is that the case? And I like to say, if I ever do another recording, it's going to be called Life Gets in the Way. We were recording during a time when the music industry was very much different. You know, radio stations in Honolulu that we won't name, were coming into their own in terms of formatting. We had gone from stations who would only play Hawaiian music that was kind of like the hapa-haole genre of Hawaiian music to seeing stations that were playing Hawaiian music and then including the contemporary Hawaiian stuff, only to see that in your lifespan, these stations that had been built on work like yours had now excluded work like yours. So a little frustrating in that respect, the idea that music stores don't sell CDs anymore. You have hard-pressed to find places. How do you market your stuff? Everything had been changing. When I did my recordings, if I invested X number of dollars into a recording, I was almost guaranteed that I would at least make that money back. I mean, it was a guarantee. I could say that. Then we went to that period of time, you know, when Kelly'i Raichel came along and Hawaiian Style Band, when the market was really great for these people. And now we're back at a time when so many people are recording and so very few of those songs get on the air. I cannot understand why, with so many talented people, the commercial radio stations, especially in Honolulu, play so very little of it on the air. And they're having to work extra hard to do things that, you know, should be easy for them at this point with all the work that people had done before that. So I watched all of this happening and I thought, I don't know how to deal with all of this. And so not recording is not for the lack of material. I have planned and not done lots of CD projects already in my brain and on paper. Not feeling like it was the right time to be doing these things and not comfortable with the way that part of the music industry was going. It's so much easier for me to play live, to express myself live, to share the songs that I do live. Not that I don't want to record, but I don't know when it will be. Hopefully sometime in the near future.
One final question. How do you define the word aloha?
Well, everybody has their own ideas. I mean, perhaps the most profound definition of aloha was given to us by Pilahipaki, recounted by Mokeale, which I cannot recite to you word for word at this moment in time. For me, all of the things that it encompasses is having a open and caring heart, treating people with respect and consideration. I think those are important things when we talk about aloha in day-to-day life. How do we treat people? Treating people as we'd like to be treated ourselves. Yeah. The olu-olu spirit of kindness that one can give to another. I think that's the important part of aloha to remember on a day-to-day basis.
Well, one of the songs you recorded was about the island of Kauai, written by Cindy Combs. Any chance you could play that for us?
I think that's kind of where this should be going. This wonderful trip up here to this place in the bamboo forest with chickens running around and the opportunity to come visit Kauai one more time. As I said earlier, Kauai has always been there, whether I knew it or not. You know, the stories that I heard about Makaweli when the family was here. When I drive out to Mana and see how barren it is, and I think, this is where my mother was born? What it could have been like at that point in time when the plantation was here. You know, when I go up to Kilauea, when we came here to play, we had just recorded our Seabird album, and Robert had many lady friends here on the island of Kauai, and oftentimes he would disappear. And so we were playing at the Kauai Resort and Robert disappeared and came back and told me all about being up at the Kilauea Lighthouse and how he had gone to spend the day with someone. You know, those were the days where you could climb right up to the edge. But because I didn't get to go, he took a picture for me. I said, you brought me this damn picture, you could have taken me with you. He said, no, I couldn't. So when I go there, I think about that. When I go out to Hanalei, I think about those days of, you know, May Day by the Bay. When I think about my friend Cindy, I think that someone found a love for a place. I thought when she moved over here that maybe she would come for a little while, but no. I should have known immediately when I heard this song that she was here for good. I love this song, and Cindy was gracious enough to let me record it. So whenever I sing this song, I think about all of these things. I think about my paternal grandparents who are resting at Hanapepe at the plantation cemetery there on the way down to Salt Pond. So I have people present all around at different aspects of this island. And so even though it's never been my home, it's been a home in terms of the healing and the beauty that it gives me. And so in closing, I want to thank KKCR. I'm grateful to the folks here for inviting me up this afternoon to share some songs with you. And so I'm going to share a couple of Kauai songs of love to say aloha to all of you. And thank you very much for supporting KKCR.
Mahalo nui loa.
Two songs of aloha for the island of Kauai. Cindy Combs' I Love Kauai and Lizzie Alohikea's Nani Kauai have been my favorites.
Songs of laughter, joy is here, following after a long trail of tears. I will come and I will go, I just want you all to know. I love Kauai. Wai ale ale, proudly standing there. I love Kauai. With a lay of misty rainbows in her hair. Songs of love to play. I love Kauai. It's here I always want to stay. Aloha e au e ko. Say, oh, how I love my island. Home. For I look up and see Wai Ale Ale standing above me, so majestic. Oke one kaulan, ao no. Apo iho apapono lahi kopoli. And all those famous sounding sands of Nohili, they're on the west side, close to where my mother was born. Oh, how appropriate it is. I should keep these thoughts and feelings close to my heart. Thank you. and that nowhere. Those fragrant holla groves of Mapuana. Nowhere, so close to the ocean that it seems to sway in the sea. Of Lizzie Alohikea say, I have shared these thoughts and feelings with you, for beautiful is my kawaii there in the kawaii.
Jerry Santos.
I know Ukahau Oli.
KKCR would like to thank Jerry Santos for sharing with us in this edition of Talk Story. Jerry was interviewed by Auntie Maria Hickling. Engineering and mastering by Dove Little, editing by Dean Rogers. Talk Story was recorded in the studios of Kauai Community Radio. For more information about this program and Kauai Community Radio, you can visit kkcr.org or call 808-826-7774. Funding is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Ahui ho, until we meet again.